you, David. It's a joy and a privilege for Liz and I to be with you tonight and just to take a few moments to share with you. As Liz said, we represent the work of the Langham Partnership. If I can encourage you to just visit Mark Armstrong over there at the end. He's got some literature on the Langham work. There's a wonderful little book here called Prayer in a Time of Pandemic. We're giving this away free. Have a look at that. It's a wonderful set of prayers written and by people not from the UK but from other parts of the world about this time. There are some magazines there that talk about John Stott and just his passion that he had. So please have a look at that. But I brought a copy here of the Africa Bible Commentary. And this is a commentary that has grown out of the life and the ministry of the Langham Partnership. This is a commentary through the scriptures written by 70 African theologians. The editor, Dr. Takombo Adeyemo, who sadly has passed away, was a good friend of ours. And I was there in Nairobi in 2006 when this Africa Bible Commentary was launched by the previous president of Kenya, Daniel Arap Moi. And there were many people in a hotel come to just observe this amazing work. It's been reprinted again, updated. It's been translated into French, into Portuguese, into Hausa, and I think even into Amharic in Ethiopia. So there are other Bible translations that have been done in the Arab world, in the Slavic world, and in Asia, all through the work of the Langham Partnership. And these are scholars, not from the West, not from Europe or North America, but these are scholars who are in the context where they're ministering, writing about the issues that they're wrestling with. In this here, there are 70 there are actually 70 articles on different issues that impact the church in Africa. Some tough issues it speaks into. So that gives you a kind of flavor of the work of the Langham Partnership and that legacy of Dr. John Stott that continues to live today. This is the Bangor Missionary Convention Week, and I want to focus on the huge subject of God's mission through the church. Our text, our key text is Acts 17, verse 6. And I've picked up these words. These men who've caused trouble all over the world have come here. These men who have caused trouble all over the world have come here. I will do an overview of this second missionary journey in Acts, setting the context and then looking at how these men caused trouble over the world at that time. And finally, to concentrate on Paul's time in Athens and the lessons that we can learn for mission today. And so, the context is Acts chapter 16, verse 18, Paul's second missionary journey. In the first missionary journey, in Acts 13 and 14, Paul and Barnabas reported back to the church in Acts 14 that had sent them out, the church of Antioch. They went over in detail what had happened over the 2 years of travel, the cities they visited, the churches they planted, the people that came to faith. And the great headline issue that they had was, the big story that they reported was that God has opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. This good news of Jesus was not to be held within the Judaistic faith. It was far bigger than that. And on the return, Paul and Barnabas stepped into a major theological dispute in the church in Acts chapter 15, verse 1. There were some teachers from Jerusalem who came teaching the men in Antioch that unless men are circumcised, according to the law of Moses, they cannot be saved. Basically, they were saying to non-Jews, you need to become like us to be accepted by God. Paul and Barnabas were outspoken in their rejection of this teaching. We read in Acts 15, verse 2. From their ministry experience, this was wrong. It would tether the new faith completely to Judaism with all its rites and practices, its restrictions, and it would limit the expansion of the gospel to the ends of the earth. So this was the big issue they were wrestling with. The conflict comes to a head in Acts chapter 15, where the leaders of Antioch send Paul and Barnabas to Jerusalem to meet the apostles and to hammer out this issue. After listening to Paul and Barnabas and their testimony of their first missionary journey and searching the scriptures, they came to the bold conclusion, it says, that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles or for people from other cultures turning to God. The council in Jerusalem supported the view of Paul and Barnabas that adopting Judaistic practice was not part of the gospel message. If this decision had gone the other way, then the movement of the gospel across cultures would have been severely restricted. The church leaders in Jerusalem then write a letter that is to be taken to all the churches, advising them of this decision. This letter was a catalyst that sent Paul back on the road in his second missionary journey. But sadly, this time Barnabas was not part of the team. There was a disagreement between Paul and Barnabas about John Mark taking them with them. John, a young Christian, had deserted them in Pamphylia during the first missionary journey. We don't know the reason, but Paul was not for taking him there again. Barnabas disagrees and wanted to keep investing in him. And we read there that actually Barnabas ends up taking John Mark to Cyprus to visit the churches there. And Paul seeks and takes Silas and heads off into Syria and Cilicia to strengthen the churches there. And so the context of this second missionary journey in Acts 16 is controversial. They were going to reject the teaching that some people were saying about from Jerusalem. And the team was split. But we know that they were going there to share the decision of the council in Jerusalem. They were going to strengthen existing churches that they had visited before in the first missionary journey. And they were also to take the gospel to where it had never been preached before, actually crossing the Bosphorus Straits and taking the gospel into Europe. Let's look at the journey that they went on at that time. It was a journey that took them back to Derbe, Lystra, and Iconium. This was Paul's third visit to Lystra and Iconium and his second visit to Derbe. Our theme is the verse 17, verse 6, the words of the Jewish synagogue leader in Thessalonica. These men have caused trouble all over the world, have come here. Some translations use the term turned the world upside down to describe the work of the early missionaries. On this occasion, Paul's teaching in Thessalonica had so upset the synagogue worshippers that they brought in the local government officials to arrest them. And the result was that Paul and Silas had to flee Thessalonica. Interestingly, a very significant milestone for the gospel is reached during these three chapters. We know from Acts chapter 8 that following Philip's encounter with the Ethiopian, that the gospel was taking into the African continent. Here in these chapters, in these verses, we find here that the gospel reaches Europe. This comes after a vision that Paul receives of a Macedonian man begging him to come over to Macedonia to help them in Acts chapter 16, verse 9. Here we have another occasion when the Holy Spirit steps into Paul's journey and clearly directs him. This is the time to cross the Bosphorus Straits, leaving Asia and into Europe. So how did this band of men cause trouble all over the world? As we move through these chapters that take us from Jerusalem to Antioch to Derbe to Lystra to Iconium to Philippi to Thessalonica to Berea to Athens and to Corinth, how did the gospel cause people trouble? Well, let me put forward what I think are five ways that the gospel caused people trouble. Number one, Acts 16, verse 1 and 2, they caused trouble in people's households. Paul was almost stoned to death in Lystra during the first missionary journey, and here he is back in the town inviting a young believer, Timothy, to join his team. Paul wanted to take him with them. He saw potential in this young man and wanted to invest in him. In fact, we sense in 2 Timothy that Paul actually passes over the mantle to Timothy before his death in the city of Rome. He invites this timid young man to leave his family and home and go on the road with Paul and Silas on the second missionary journey. I'm sure this caused great anxiety for Timothy's mother and for her family and for his grandmother. They had seen Paul stoned in Lystra on the first missionary journey, barely escaping death. What would happen to this young man? I can think of Liz's mum, who struggled to accept that we were going to serve God in Ethiopia during the 84-85 famine. The gospel can turn families and households upside down. But I think number two, the gospel caused trouble with the Jewish faith. In most towns they visited, Philippi, Thessalonica, Berea, Athens, and Corinth, Paul and his team met up with Jewish believers in the synagogues to preach the gospel. He wanted also to present to them the findings of the Jerusalem Council. Many of these synagogue worshippers totally rejected the gospel. They could only envisage people coming to faith in their God unless they were inside Judaism. And in reaction, they attacked Paul and his team. And so the gospel turns other religious beliefs upside down. And then number three, I think the gospel, they caused trouble for traders, those in business. Philippi was a huge trading center at the time of Paul there. It was actually at the terminus of the Roman highway called the Via Ignatia. This was a major trading route for the Roman Empire to the Middle East. It was a strategic point for advancement of the gospel from Jerusalem to the center of the Roman Empire. Paul heals a demon-possessed girl in Philippi who was a slave. And this girl earned money for her owners by telling the fortunes of other people. Paul frees her from her demon possession, and her owners realize that their hope of making money from her has now gone. They attack Paul and Silas and have them thrown in prison. And the gospel demands here, I think in this occasion, that we reflect on the justice and righteousness of God in our actions and actions of others. Paul and Silas challenged the traders in Philippi by freeing the girl from demon possession, thereby losing her ability to tell the fortune of other people. There were many examples today in our society, in our culture, of fair trade initiatives undertaken by Christians that seek to challenge businesses that take advantage of the growers of crops. There are examples of Christians seeking to stem the flow of young girls into the sex trafficking. Think of the work of the International Justice Ministry. The gospel turns the economy upside down. And then number four, I think we have here that they caused trouble for the governing authorities. In Philippi, Thessalonica, Berea, Corinth, Paul and Silas run into trouble with the government because of the preaching of the gospel. They even caused trouble in the prison in which Paul, as in Philippi, as the jailer and his family and others become followers of Jesus. This continues to happen today in many nations, where to preach the gospel, you can be thrown into prison. I think of places like Afghanistan and Iraq and other places where that is very difficult. And so they caused trouble for the governing authorities. The gospel turns the authorities upside down. And then the fifth one, it says they caused trouble amongst the philosophers. Paul takes on the philosophical capital of the world, Athens. The Greek Empire had gone by this time, but it was still recognized, Athens was still recognized as the philosophical center of the world. The gospel turns the minds of men upside down. I want to take the few remaining moments that we have to learn the lessons from Paul's time in Athens that will help us today. What can we learn from Paul's visit to Athens that will help us to be effective disciples of Jesus in Ireland? Let me put forward a few points that I have here. We need to understand our audience's worldview. Paul uses his knowledge of his audience, the Epicureans and the Stoics, as Liz read, to tailor how he represents the truth to maximize its impact and reception by these people. We need to know our culture and what people are thinking in order to communicate effectively the gospel. Epicureans had similar beliefs to the present-day evolutionary naturalists. God is just a higher, evolved, material being. The Stoics had similar beliefs to the present-day New Age pantheists. They see God in everything. We need to take time to understand what people are thinking, where they get their convictions from, and where they get their values from, and the way they live. Let me give you an illustration here in this little view between secularism and Christianity. In the view of God, the secularist views them as an atheist. For us, we believe in God. We believe in theism as a one God. The view of man, the secularists believe that we are evolved. As Christians, we believe in the special creation in the image of God. On the issue of truth, secularists believe in cultural relativity. We believe in absolute truth in Christian faith. In the view of science, scientific materialism and naturalism is believed by the secularists. But here, science, general, and the Bible, and the specific revelation of God, this is where we get our convictions from for knowledge. And then on ethics, we find cultural relativity in ethics. But here, as Christians, we believe in an absolute morality that we need to follow. This is a little illustration of how we need to wrestle with understanding the culture that is around us. And then I think secondly, we need to establish a cultural bridge to engage their worldview. Paul uses their pantheon of idols as a springboard to talk about the unknown God, whom they've made an altar to. Paul says, let me tell you about him because all your religious fervor and all of that fervor, you've missed who the true God is. Likewise, in our culture, there are lots of issues. Events, ideas, films, art, books, music, which contain some elements of truth or reflect something we do with something to do with the gospel that we can grasp and to turn that into a bridge to communicate the gospel in a way our biblically challenged and secular culture can relate to and understand. John Stott said Christians must be able to practice double listening, to be someone who reads the Bible in the one hand and the newspaper in the other and bring them both together to understand Christ and all that he has done for them. And then I think thirdly, we need to explain the foundations of the Christian worldview. Paul introduces them to the living Creator God who is the foundation of all reality. In doing so, he is also challenging the false beliefs about God that the people had in their minds. We need to be able to introduce people to God where they are at and be able to correct their false understandings about who God is and how they relate to him in this world. Here is how Paul explains this in verses 24 to 27 that we read. In verse 24, he explains God as the powerful creator of all things and thus the owner of all things and the only true God. Again, in verse 23, he shows God as the uncontainable within his creation. In verse 25, God is not dependent on his creation or even need anything from it. In verse 25 again, he says that God sustains all things. He's not part of his creation, he's above it. In verse 26, God is sovereign over all things, people and places. And again, in verse 27, he's a personal God who desires to have a relationship with each individual person. And so I think the other thing that we can learn here from this is that we need to challenge the inconsistencies in other worldviews. And Paul does that here. Paul points out that even their own poets say that we are God's offspring. He said it is inconsistent and irrational to worship created things when they are merely the creations of God rather than God himself. People believe in many things today. They struggle to live consistently with what they think is actually true. And by turning the tables and showing a person the inconsistencies that they are living, we can really help them to see that our biblical worldview and that the Christian faith makes sense of everything. Let me give you an example. Someone who does not believe in God must believe the universe has no purpose, no cause, and no destiny. However, no one actually lives that way. Everyone lives for some purpose and for some sort of destiny. So we need to be able to use these things to dig into their worldview with the message of the gospel. And then I think lastly, we need to present the message of the gospel. And Paul does that faithfully here. Paul tells them of the need of repentance and that God will judge the world with justice for its wicked rebellion. And the proof of this is that God has raised Jesus from the dead. Paul's gospel presentation focuses on the historic event of Jesus' resurrection and exaltation as God's judge. This is significant for our culture, which does not like to hear the true central truth of Christianity. The worldview in the story is not simply a fiction and a fanciful idea in Christianity. It is plain, irrefutable, and compelling fact. Paul presents them with a historic fact that demonstrates the truth and the validity of the Christian faith and the Christian worldview, and impresses upon them the need to get right with God based on the future judgment, which the resurrection demonstrates is indeed a reality. And so we need to understand our audience's worldview. We need to establish a cultural bridge and engage with that worldview. We need to explain carefully the foundations of the Christian worldview and what we believe. And we need to demonstrate and show the inconsistencies in other worldviews. But then most of all, we need to present the gospel, the risen Christ in all his power. The gospel caused trouble all over the world, and it's continuing to do so today. We should not be surprised by that. Jesus said to his disciples in the upper room discourse in John chapter 16, he said, I have told you these things. And that was about the coming of the Holy Spirit. I've told you these things so that in me you will have peace. But then he says, in the world you will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world. So the gospel causes trouble. It turns the world upside down. I would like to put it another way for you this evening. The gospel turns the world right side up. Not upside down, but it turns it right side up. Through our sin and rejection of God, we are actually living in an upside down world. The people are living in an upside down world. And so as we think of here in your area, here in Ireland, let's continue to turn the world right side up. Here in this town, this village on itself, in Ireland, in Europe, and to the ends of the earth. This is the great calling that God has for all of us this evening. Let me pray.